The experiences and views shared in this podcast are personal and meant for education and entertainment only. Please remember these episodes are never intended to replace the guidance and advice of your child's licensed healthcare provider. You're listening to the Extra to Love podcast, brought to you by Extra to Love, a nonprofit serving families of people with trisomy 13 to 18, with your host, Amber Scuderi.
Welcome back to the Extra to Love podcast. I'm your host, Amber, and with me is my co-host, Emma.
Hi.
And our very special guest, Deirdre.
Hello.
We are so excited to have her on today to talk to us about Journey. She is going to be the very first member of ETL's brand new Parent Advisory Council. She will be helping us bridge... Deirdre will be representing the Trisomy 13 families in our community. She's a fantastic advocate for Journey. She's an incredible resource, and she's just well-loved in our own community and the way that she tries to support both Trisomy 18 and Trisomy 13 families. We are beyond excited to have her on board, and you will be hearing more of her and seeing more of her as she helps us bring the stories of the Trisomy 13 families to our podcast. So, Deirdre.
So awesome.
I know. I'm so excited. We're excited to have you on board.
Yes. I just wanted to say thank you so much for the opportunity. It's something that I prayed about a lot. I've actually been praying in what manner I could be a part of something that is already established and doing such wonderful things. And it was just a clear cut kind of answer for me when I was able to engage in prayer about it and know that this was the right thing to be a part of. So thank you for having me.
Of course, I can't wait to see how you can help us help the Trisomy 13 community. I have personally always admired you on social media. So I was a big giant fan for you in the background. And I'm like, we have to bring her on. There's so many things that you do for a community that if you weren't already doing them, I would totally be doing because we just have that same heart for everybody. As you share Journey's story with us, if you would tell our listeners what you want to be the biggest takeaway from Journey's story.
I would have to say the biggest takeaway that I think it's actually essential for everybody to know is that our children are a calling of faith. I might even get emotional talking about this, but I feel like God designs every story. And sometimes in our lives, we don't even see the background being set up for something bigger. I know for myself, I thought I was called for so many other things in which in those moments of time, I believe I was. But there was a moment before I was pregnant with Journey where I remember having a conversation with God and just saying, I have one child. And because I have one child, there is a lot of fear surrounding that. What if I lose her? What am I going to do, God, in that situation? And then lo and behold, I'm pregnant with Journey. And initially, I thought, okay, he's saying, you know, don't have that fear. We have many children. We have many experiences in our lives. But I didn't even realize what he was actually setting me up for was to accomplish faith over fear. And I think whether you're navigating, if you were a non-believer, if you have a walk that you have with a living child, or if you have a walk with an angel, that it's a calling that God has for you to strengthen your faith in some capacity. And when you embrace that, it becomes an amazing experience.
That is so great. I just know this is going to be such a great episode just from that right there. So I'm so excited to hear everything that you have to say through this episode. And I just appreciate your vulnerability already. I know that like you're going to take us there. Like you're going to take us to those vulnerable, like amazing places that this journey takes you. So anyways, start by telling us about who you are, your family dynamic, your spouse. You already kind of mentioned your other child. Tell us kind of a picture of what your family looks like.
So my family... Myself, I would describe myself as knowing that I wanted to be a teacher from the time I was really, really young. And that was what I pursued as far as education. I ended up with my bachelor's in science for teaching. And I did teach both at the elementary and middle school levels. And that's what I embraced doing along with coaching. I got that passion from my father, who was my coach all throughout my life. And I just have always loved children and helping mold their lives and supporting others to know that they can be anything they want to be and that they can be more than they ever thought they could be. And so that's kind of who I feel like I am. I married my spouse 6 years ago, Michael, and he and I really shared kind of that same value system of we enjoy working with others and supporting other people. So he's been a great support, is a great support throughout all of this. And he's definitely a cheerleader for me, where he's always telling me, you can do this, you can advocate, you have that ability, you can take in medical terminology and have those conversations and people understand you. And so he's been a great support in that way. And he's also taken on a lot of roles. Initially, before we went through anything medical, he was literally faint at the sight of blood. And now he's that person that can do any of the cares that may involve any different various like fluids of nature. And it doesn't bother him at all because it's his child and it's helping somebody. So it's kind of changed things for him. We have my oldest 14-year-old Savvy, who is quite a spitfire. She keeps me on my toes. She's a teen. So she's in those teen years. And she has just developed a passion overall for medicine. And I think we'll kind of talk about it a little bit later. But a lot of Journey's life has designed or helped to design what she sees for her immediate future, which is a beautiful thing. And she's just that child that you enjoy having because she just has this amazing spirit about her. So she motivates me a lot to be the best mom I can be. And then, of course, Journey, she challenges me. She is just joy in a bottle. That's the best way I describe her. I look at her and she can change my mood. She is an instant mood lifter. And I've heard that from a lot of people, but she does it for me every time.
What I personally love about what you just said is Journey's, correct me if I'm wrong, but Journey's 4 now, correct?
Yes, she's 4 and a half. She'll be 5 in December.
So what I love is that this many years into medical mom life, you're able to lovingly and eloquently describe your spouse. Because obviously this life can be very hard on a relationship or a marriage in that way. And so it's just really beautiful to see and hear you talk about your husband in that way and to see that, I mean, obviously these things may have not been easy, right? There's challenges and all of that. But to know that you are almost 5 years into the game and you guys are still your biggest cheerleaders and your biggest support system. And I love that.
Absolutely.
When we did the questionnaire, a thing that I really was taken back by was the fact that you mentioned you deliver Journey with a doula midwife, correct?
Yes, I had both a midwife and a doula present.
Okay, so I want to hear more about what your delivery was like because I personally had Evelyn with a midwife as well. And so I was very intrigued to just kind of hear and understand maybe how your delivery went. I know in your questionnaire you had mentioned that they possibly saw some abnormalities. So kind of just take us through your pregnancy and what your delivery was like. I for one, am very intrigued because we may have some similarities amongst our stories.
Yes, I would say if I'm starting from the pregnancy piece, I didn't really have any signs that anything was different for me, like some people explained. When I had Savvy, I also was very sick the first trimester. So to have the level of morning sickness I had with Journey, that was completely normal to me. Pregnancy has always been a little bit harder on my body overall. I actually had a miscarriage of my first child in my 20s. And so I've always had to kind of take it a little bit easier. But there wasn't any real telltale signs of anything until about 20 weeks when we had my first ultrasound. And at that ultrasound, it just took a really long time. And you have to know there are 10 years difference between my children. So I kept thinking I was a little crazy saying, I don't remember it taking this long, but that was accurate. It did not take that long. It was a couple hours where we sat there. But the interesting part was the ultrasound tech was brand new to her job. it was kind of easy to chalk up as, oh, she's figuring things out. Again, the teacher in me was like, okay, just give her time and patience. You know, I just need to relax within this. And when she did call in a superior to her, they came in and it was like click, 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 and it was done. And so that also helped me to kind of dismiss things initially. Then I received a phone call. So I was at a women's clinic for a period of time with one particular midwife that only saw me up to 26 weeks. And then afterwards I had a second. But at that, the initial person, she called me after the ultrasound, or I should say her office called me. It was a Friday and said she wants to talk to you in person. Well, of course, immediately all the bells and whistles are going off in my head of, okay, you can't tell me whether I'm having a boy or a girl. What's going on? And they couldn't divulge that. I essentially was begging them to just let me know what's going on because I was going into a weekend, and the weekend then had to go by. So I had to roll with that. And Monday came around and I went into the office and we sat down face to face. And she said, this particular ultrasound tech is not sure, but some of the things she believes that she's seen could be cardinal signs to things that we will not be able to facilitate here. You're going to have to go to a larger city. You're going to have to go to Portland if this is true. However, it's a big question mark. So she said, you really have to get in immediately and get another ultrasound done. And so, of course, initially there, that definitely stirred a lot of fear and stress. But I just made the call to the place where I had gone prior, and they weren't available until that next Friday. And I knew I couldn't wait that long. So I switched gears, went with a different place, went in there. The ultrasound tech saw me that very next day. It was a Tuesday. And she looked at me and she said, I've been doing this for over 30 years. Everything is fine. I don't know what they thought they saw. And the two things they talked about was that they felt like there were different measurements regarding her brain. And they also felt like that they saw that the stomach could have potentially been on the wrong side of the body. And she said, no, it's right where it's supposed to be. And her brain measurements are just fine. Now, from the midwife I was seeing at the time, she had enough disbelief when I contacted her about it, because she wanted me to contact her following that ultrasound. She said, I want a second tech to go in and confirm this. And so a second tech went in, looked over everything, looked at the measurements, looked at the placement, and said, everything is just fine. She has a completely normal, healthy baby. And I remember walking out and my mom was there with me. And I said to my mom, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm like, that is so overwhelming. And I understand that girl was brand new, but I'm like, to bring such stress about to a family without something being true. Wow. That's tough. But I said, okay, we've got a healthy kiddo and we're moving forward. And from that moment on, we never even looked back, never even gave it a second thought. We just chalked it up to this person is brand new to what she was doing. And she made an error. And we always, our philosophy, I guess, about having a child is we're having a child regardless. So any of the other things to me and to my husband, we weren't going to be doing them anyways, because regardless, we're going to have a child. And so we just moved forward. The rest of my pregnancy, I felt healthy. I actually had Journey at full term. She broke my water, which was different. I didn't have my water break with Savvy. Savvy didn't want to evacuate. She wanted to stay in there for forever. But Journey said, world, I'm coming. And she broke my water. They had me labor some at home. And I went in and literally you could go back on my social media data and you could see, because if people don't know me yet, I'm a little bit sarcastic. I like to joke around. I'm kind of a big personality. And my husband and I were doing, they had a chart in the hospital where we were at. And it had all the different positions you can use for labor. And we were taking pictures in all of them, like cracking jokes, all this, like right before Journey was ready to come. There's an irony in a sense of how much the tables turned very quickly once I actually was done with labor, but labor actually went really, really well. My midwife was there. My doula was there throughout it all. I felt like I knew what I was doing because I'd already had a child prior and I knew what I wanted. I was able to get in the bath, which completely relaxed me so much to the point I went from like 0 to 10 and they're like, okay, she's ready to push. And then once Journey was born, she hit some sort of nerve, that ring of fire that they talk about. It just stayed. And I was in so much pain that it kind of distracted me from what all of a sudden started happening within the room, because we weren't in an appropriate level of hospital. There wasn't even a doctor present at the time. And the room just filled. And I didn't realize that it was filling because of Journey. My doula kept advocating for me, like, hey, mom needs some medicine or something going on here. She's in an exorbitant amount of pain. And I just kind of was in a blur for a bit. And then once they were able to get my pain under control after they had dealt with everything with Journey, which I was still unaware of, that's when all of a sudden things kind of got real. Was like, why were all these people in the room? And then I realized they had called in a doctor. There was all this extra staff. They pulled my husband out of the room with her, did some sort of evaluation of things. And then they brought her back in and he had tears in his eyes. And he's like, Deirdre, I've got to rush up with her to Portland. You need to stay here. And I'm going with her. And I just kind of looked at him in disbelief. I got to hold her for a brief moment in all of that happened. There was a brief moment of time that I held her. It wasn't very long. And then I looked at everybody in the room and I said, I'm going. My child is not going to be without me. And I was so thankful to God at that time. I decided to have a natural childbirth because they looked at me and they said, well, as soon as we make sure that you're not going to bleed out or do anything like that, then we'll release you. And it was a few hours later, I went up there that night and I was with her in the NICU.
Wow. I'm actually feeling quite emotional hearing about the way that God kind of orchestrated that conviction in you to have a natural birth to make you able to do that. I just think that's so wonderful and just reminds us how God goes before us and kind of prepares a way. And I love that you mentioned that. So if I'm understanding you correctly, you did not have a diagnosis before Journey's birth?
Correct. There was no diagnosis. And also just to add on to what you said about God orchestrating so much, there's another big piece that not a lot of people are privy to. With my first child, Savvy, after her birth, I suffered really bad postpartum depression. It took about 2 years to fully come out of it. And I had never dealt with depression in my life, never dealt with anxiety, never dealt with any of those things. And it hit me really hard. And it was very scary. And prior to Journey's birth, I decided to seek a counselor and say, hey, I've been told if you have postpartum, oftentimes the second time around, it can be even worse and you usually deal with it. But I said, I'm in such a different situation now and I'm in such a supportive relationship and I'm in a really healthy and happy space that I feel like I'm good. I really don't think it's going to happen this time. And the counselor looked at me and said after two sessions, you know what? I agree with you. I think barring having anything traumatic, you're going to be just fine. And I think that God protected me from having that information and potentially going through some of the trauma that some women face, knowing all this ahead of time and what they may experience from what I would say would be a more inexperienced kind of medical community or those that are not privy to the stories like ours. And I know that he protected me from that because I didn't face any postpartum depression after Journey. Did I have some periods off and on? Sure. I think we all do with every child. There's little bits of what they call like the baby blues and whatnot, but nothing negative like that happened. And God was my shield and all of that, because I think he knew if I had to sit with the information for too long, I'm way too analytical and probably would have had a really hard time trying to tell people I'm doing this regardless of what you're saying. And I think it would have been too much for me emotionally.
I can understand where you're coming from in that sense. I haven't experienced postpartum depression in that way, but I can definitely say from my experience, at least, that my pregnancy was one of the most traumatic parts of this entire journey. And so I think that's wonderful that you feel like you know, God's hand of protection kind of shielded you from a lot of those experiences. So tell us about diagnosis day, about how you were told that she has trisomy 13, and what were the doctor's impression that they gave you about how they felt about the diagnosis and if they were supportive of sustaining her life from that point forward and things like that.
So we didn't actually get Journey's diagnosis until about 2 days after her birth when we traveled up north, which is in Portland. It's a much larger city than where we were living in Salem, which happens to be the capital of Oregon. We went up there and a geneticist was the first that spoke with me. And I just remember her saying, "We believe we know what's going on, but we're not sure. And so we've got to do some testing to figure this out." And then she just kind of looked at me with a blank look and said, "Do you use Google?" I said, "No, not really." Again, for those people that know me, I'm not wonderful with anything tech wise. So I have a tendency to not utilize a lot of those different resources. Now I do endlessly, but at the time I didn't. And she said, "Good, don't." She said, "If we are correct about this, I will give you the name of what we think this is, and just don't Google it." So of course I was perplexed with all of that. And they said that they were going to run the testing, and they explained like the paneling that they had to do, but they explained that it was going to take several days to get the full data back. And so I didn't actually expect for her to come back the next day and confirm that it was trisomy 13. And that's the first time she used her formal diagnosis and again reiterated, "Don't Google it." And then she said, "But I do need to tell you this. Most likely you're probably not going to have more than a week with your daughter." She said 7 days is usually the longest. And my initial response, I believe, was shock, because I'm looking at Journey and I'm just not seeing a kid that only had a week in front of her. And so it was very confusing to take in the information that was being given to me and presented when I felt so differently. And I think she thought maybe I wasn't fully absorbing what she was saying, because the next couple days she kept coming into the NICU and basically restating what she said each time, just saying, "Hey, so you know, you probably are not going to have longer than 7 days with your child." And I think it was somewhere along like day four, day five, I finally just stopped and I stopped her. And I said, "Look, I appreciate you. I appreciate science. I believe in it. But I said, we're also a family of faith. And if indeed I only have a week with my child, I want to spend that time with her, enjoying her, and not thinking about all things that could be negative or just dwelling in the potential of her loss. I want to love on her and I want to do all of these things." But in the back of my head, I also too was just like, gosh, you know, they thought she was going to be on oxygen for this period of time and she came off of it, you know, and she was breathing on her own. And they had said multiple things in the beginning that they thought were going to be the case. And she just kept proving them wrong. And I couldn't help also just feel something deep within my gut. And so, again, as I said, the biggest takeaway, obviously, for me with Journey's story was the faith over fear. It was right about that time I said a giant prayer to God. And I said, "God, you have to know that with me, you've kind of got to like hit me upside the head with clarity, because I can miss big signs. But I can do this if you can give me her purpose." Sorry, I'm going to get really emotional with this part because it was so clear. And that night I was on my Facebook because I had been running. It was my own business at the time. I had a Christian cheer gym that I ran. And I had these people that were flooding my Facebook because they were following what was going on with us in the NICU. And I had some people reach out to me that I didn't even know. And they said, "I just felt compelled to tell you this, but like, I don't really believe, but I find myself praying for your daughter and I don't know what that means." And we had other people that reached out to me that said, "I've really fallen away from my faith, but this has really reignited it. And I'm back to wanting to go to church again." And that was my answer. God was so clearly telling me She was going to lead people to strengthen their faith. She was going to lead people to him. And how do you not then embrace that and know that you've been given a beautiful gift and he's in control? So in that, I said, okay, I'm going to relinquish this to you as much as I can. I'm human, so obviously I'm going to have my moments, but I know that I need my faith to be bigger than my fear. And that's when I found myself really digging deep to become an advocate, because I don't feel like our doctors met us with anything where they were telling us that she was not going to receive anything as far as her care. I feel like they were more than willing to do things. I just feel strongly that they thought it was bleak. And I remember one conversation I had with a doctor that I really liked. He had a really great bedside manner. And I looked at him and I said, so here we are in the NICU. How do I get Journey home? And for me, that meant, how do I prove that this girl is going to do her thing and she's going to thrive? She's going to just go home and we're going to be able to navigate things as they come to us. And he looked at me and he said, oh, yeah. He said, we can do a G-tube and we can do a trach and we can send you home on hospice. And again, I think my face must have dropped, because in 2014, I had lost my father to pancreatic cancer. And so I definitely knew what hospice meant to me. And he kind of looked at me and said, oh, are you not sure what hospice is? And I said, no, 100%. I know what that is. But that's not what I'm asking. And so that was an interesting encounter. And of course, as we all learn, you don't always have the same doctors for a really long period of time. And right about that time, we switched to the very last attending that we had in the NICU. And he and I had conversations where I said, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to prove that she can do some of these things that you think maybe that she can't. So can I have a chance to prove that she can drink my milk? Can I have that opportunity? And they gave it to me. And I remember when Journey was first drinking my milk and she latched, first of all, first time she latched. But then I remember also looking in the NICU and saying, why does everybody give bottle to these NICU babies? And they talked about just like the work of effort and that they could lose more than what they gain by trying to breastfeed. And so I said, okay, well, I'm going to expressly pump then. And I want her to have my milk. And I just kept giving her the bottle where she would drink more and more daily. And initially that doctor would come in and say, okay, you know, this is great. She took 10% of her calories that way and they were gavaging the rest. But, you know, she's only at 10%. And I said, okay, yeah, but this is, you know, day one. Can we like go to day three of trying this? And we go a couple more days and then it was 20% and then it was 30%. And he finally set me to goal of he wanted her taking 50% of her calories in orally. And then he was okay with us going home without a G-tube. And the other conversations kind of came off the plate too. And she finally proved herself. And it was day 27 that we left the NICU and went home. And when I look back on it, it was a little bit of a good luck kind of situation and kind of feeling. And so we probably could have been much better prepared. But again, it was what her story was supposed to be. So we went home on day 27 and we had oxygen at the house. We had a concentrator and I think one singular tank. We didn't even have suction or anything else like that. And we had to start figuring things out ourselves from that moment kind of forward.
I just wanted to jump in really quick. I know Amber has the next question, but I just wanted to say a couple of things. And the first one is just about how your story really speaks to the fact that a lot of doctors can kind of tend to treat the diagnosis and not treat the child. And so to say that you'll have less than a week with her, but you're saying that that doesn't really look like what I'm looking at. They're just speaking about the diagnosis in general. And what we need from providers is to look at our child and look at their complexities and their obstacles and tell me about my child, not just this overarching diagnosis, because there's such a spectrum. And so I love that you made that distinction of like, this is what the doctor's telling me, but I'm looking at this child in front of me and that's not what I'm seeing. And so I think that that's just a really great observation to make and something that I hope any providers listening to this take away from this, because I think most of us have some sort of testimony to that.
100%. 100%. I know I've said that before too. And I think that goes with a lot of families where sometimes, even when I tell Evelyn's story, I'm like, I just wish somebody would have just looked at her complexities as a whole, did every test possible and said, okay, this kid's got a chance. She's going to be okay. Instead of the doom and gloom overall general consensus. But all that said, Journey has one of the best, most contagious, cutest little smiles. And anytime that you share her with us on social media, it always makes me smile. So tell us about Journey and her likes, her dislikes, her personalities. Because I know when I describe Evelyn, sometimes I'm like, she's cute, but she's got toot. She's got all the toot. So bring Journey to life for our listeners.
Well, I think what you said perfectly encapsulates her in the fact that she has facial expressions down pat. Whether it's her smirk, which creates or invokes laughter, or whether... I don't even know if I'm supposed to say this here, but she kind of has an RBF at times. She can literally just look perturbed and you know it. She's just utterly expressive, so much that I love to caption what she's thinking, because I think she, even though she's nonverbal, she communicates so beautifully how she's feeling, which I would have to say 9 times out of 10 is joyous. I feel like she brings people up, not to say that you want to always have to source from somebody else joy, but I know even that my staff will come and they say, I just need Journey today. Because I had a rough night or I'm having a rough day, and I know she's going to make me feel so much better because she has that presence about her and her expressions. She's going to be laughing. Even in times when it's harder for her and you or I would be crying or complaining, she's laughing, she's smiling, she loves people. She has the most amazing embrace. She hugs you with her soul. You just feel special when you're with her. She loves to travel. She's definitely a child that likes to go places, and she knows when she's going places, and she's happy about it. The moment we get in the car, when we've been on our RV, when we were blessed by you guys to be able to go to Texas, even for when we were going for medical transport, when she was on the plane, the rest of us are like, ugh, the turbulence and the takeoff and the landing were really quick. And she's all giggles about it. You know, she thought, she's such a thrill seeker. She thought it was so much fun. I would say she's known probably most for a few items. One being her fishbowl, which is her favorite toy ever, that she loves to just smack against her face. And that's how she plays with it, essentially, is she takes the little leaves of it and hits it over and over. And we have had to buy so many of those fish bowls, which, by the way, they stopped making them. And so now we're literally having to find them over in Europe to supply her with them. She's known also for her little crinkle pizza. It was a Target pizza that we found. And so she's well known for that. She's known for her bows because, well, I think that's a little bit of the Texas in me. I like the big bows. And so she's got the big bows on her head, just like her sister did. But she's definitely known for always.
You're talking to two bow mamas as well. We both love the bows in our girls' hair. So we get that.
So I said it's a little of that Texas in me. My dad grew up in Texas, so I think he somehow instilled that in me. I don't know. And I would say she's also known just like for fashion. We love dressing her, and I swear she has her opinions. She knows if dad or I have a couple male support staff, when they dress her, she kind of like looks at me like, Mom, please help. Sorry, guys. But and then when the gals participate in it, she loves it. She loves it, especially like getting dressed for church, because she gets to wear her dresses. And I think she knows that she's like sporting a pretty dress and very girly at the time. So she's a lot of personality, and she has a lot of fight in her too. She's just an absolute fighter, like all of our children really are. They're just the most amazing fighters.
That's absolutely true. I know that all of us moms, you know, especially a few years into this journey, could probably do a whole episode just describing all of our kids' medical complexities and needs. Give us, or our listeners rather, a quick rundown list off of Journey's kind of medical obstacles, basically, or history. And then, you know, kind of despite that, what you feel like is still important to know about how her medical history doesn't define her.
I feel like the way I could almost encapsulate Journey's journey, if you will, regarding her medical complexities, honestly, for us as parents, it's really been more about having to fight time for her needing more time for things, because she does have a G-tube. Other than that, she doesn't really have any other accessories that she has on a regular basis. She does have seizures that she deals with when she has some sort of active infection or illness. They've gotten more prominent the older she's gotten. But honestly, the obstacles we've had to face usually have been in regards to time and having to press upon that. The two times that she has been very, very ill, one with rhinovirus the first time and the second time with RSV, both times I had to press upon the fact that she needed more time to heal and that she actually didn't need some of the things they were suggesting, that she just needed more time than the average child. And fortunately, God guided me in the right way in those, because I definitely had to have some really serious thought and conversations regarding some things that they were willing to intercede with, which I think is a huge blessing. When I look at it, the fact that they were always willing to give her what they thought that she may need, that's a huge blessing. I thank our medical community up here for the interventions they've always been willing to give her. But my mom, heart, kind of knew differently. And I was also speaking with, as we all do, we speak within our community and we talk through people who have gone through the experiences, and they give us so much insight. And then you pray about it and you have to make some tough decisions. But it was always, for Journey, it was always time, really, that we had to figure out with her complexities. The only, like I said, the only real gear, if you will, she has is her G-tube. And even at that, I'm very thankful that she has that, because she gets her medication that way. We're able to keep her abundantly hydrated that way. But she has learned to fully navigate eating by mouth. So that was a blessing that she was able to accomplish. Yeah, I keep going back to it. It's been time.
Has she had any other surgeries or procedures?
She did have, at 2.5 years, she did have her tethered cord released.
Oh, okay.
And that one, honestly, was really quite a quick navigation. It feels like it's such a scary initial thing to discuss, something with a spinal cord for your child, but she really healed quickly and well with it. There was some, what we thought, initial dehiscement, but that wasn't actually the case. We had a really good neurosurgeon, and we went in and she had actually had like a reaction to the adhesive that they had used. And so there was an initial time that was scary where we thought something else was going on that wasn't, but it was pretty quick turnover of healing for that. And when she had her G-tube surgery, I should say this too, she had a LADS procedure, and they also performed an appendectomy. And that was while they were in there, I had asked them to look to see if she had malrotation. She was malrotated. They did the LADS procedure. And then they also noticed that her appendix was on the wrong side of her body. So they removed that.
She's just like the ultimate rock star. One of the things that I have enjoyed watching is the relationship between Savvy and Journey. You had mentioned earlier that she's very medical minded at this point. So it's safe to say that she may take a role in the medical world as she continues to grow and gets to college and all of that. But I do know that your daughter is a little older. So I kind of want to know what their relationship is like and how she has specifically processed everything. Because I think in the hustle and bustle of this life, we sometimes forget that it also affects the other children. And typically it's not the way that we're warned by medical professionals that it's going to affect them. And it usually ends up being the opposite direction. So tell us a little bit about their relationship.
Sure, absolutely. Definitely there is quite a gap between the two of them. There's 10 years apart. When Journey was born and Savvy was 10 years of age, initially, the only thing she could think of at first was just, you know, I'm going to embrace her. This is strange spending Christmas, because since Journey was born in December, we ended up spending that Christmas in the NICU. It was pre-COVID. It was just a few months before COVID hit. And so we spent Christmas in the NICU together. And I don't think it sunk in fully at first, because she has another sibling from my ex that was born early, so they had spent time with him in the NICU as well. Once we got home and some of the things that happened, Journey dealt with a lot of breath holding spells that were very scary in the beginning and something that we tried to navigate and figure out on our own. And so there was a lot of navigating at home initially. I think in that mindset, it sometimes made her grow up quickly, but it also helped her to gain a lot of empathy to things. It made her want to also make things better for families, as far as from a standpoint of how can a medical community learn more to aid the families. And what I mean from that is she decided, or at least right now, her drive is to end up at Baylor. She wants to be a gastroenterologist because she feels like so many of the things specifically that Journey's gone through and what she's seen from other kids have really been driven more from, if you will, she said, you know, it seems like things all kind of, how do I even phrase this? They kind of centralize from if there's something wrong in the gut, then there could be something wrong neurologically. If there's something wrong in the gut, there can be something wrong from a urological standpoint. And so she just really wants to be able to help people from that now. And I'd have to say their relationship, gosh, Savvy can do no wrong with Journey. Journey idolizes Savvy. And I know that makes Savvy feel extra, extra special. She can do no wrong. She laughs at everything her sister does. And then Savvy just adores Journey. She's very protective over her. I would say the hardest thing that we've had to probably face with their relationship is sometimes we all deal with things differently. And sometimes I feel like Savvy feels that need to distance herself because she loves her sister so much that when we do go into the hospital or things are really tough, that's where a little bit of fear can creep in, where she's afraid of being so close and then what that loss could feel like. And so I do understand that abundantly as a parent, but it was definitely something we have had to have lots of conversations about, because at certain times it was confusing to me how much she embraced her sister in one moment and then another she almost created like a distance or a wall for a period of time. But that was just protecting her own heart because she loves her so much. They have the closest relationship. It's almost like they have their own language, and there's not a single moment where Savvy hasn't done something, even if Journey is not feeling well or she's hurt or something, and Savvy does something and Journey laughs. She's all of a sudden breaks out into absolute laughter. It just becomes comedy hour all of a sudden. So their relationship is just, it's beautiful. Really, it is.
I love hearing that. And my girls are flip-flops. Sage is my firstborn. And then Annie is younger than her, of course. And so I don't get that immediate feedback now because Annie can't communicate or understand anything really about Sage just yet. And so I love hearing that. And I just look forward to watching my own girls' relationship develop, because I've heard from people like you and people like Amber and Jen all talking about their sibling relationships. And I just love that. I know we can all attest to there being many difficult things about, you know, this whole experiment and this walk that we all live. What advice would you give to a family who's just received this diagnosis or is new on their journey? What advice would you have for them?
I think I would say realize that your resiliency is going to be challenged, but that there is such a community, such a village that's present, that's willing to help, and so many people that care and are going to love your child and you, that will help you through it each and every step. As I said, there's always this pervasive fear that seems to be presented, but yet you don't have to walk it alone. And I think there's significant beauty in that you're not walking that challenge alone. God always promises us that, but he actually creates it in a way where it's illustrated that we have other people that are walking with us. And in the world that we have, you can see a lot of things, if you want to, that are really negative out there. And this actually becomes a really positive interaction with other people. You can find so much beauty in so many people. You'll develop so many relationships relationships and love so many other children that you may never even see in person. It may only be online, but you fall in love with them. You fall in love with the families, and there's a giant network of hope.
This journey itself, I feel like it either makes or breaks you, and it challenges you in a lot of ways when it comes to our faith. And I don't expect the perfect answer about this question, but I do like to ask it because I think it's okay for people to understand our position on where we are with this question. But where is your relationship and your walk with God now in comparison to where it was before you had Journey? Because I know you mentioned early on that she was pretty much an answered prayer in all sorts of ways. And so has your walk with the Lord been challenged? Are you struggling with him in any part, or have you in any season? Has it gotten better? What does that look like now?
I honestly feel like it's strengthened. The reason why I feel like it's strengthened is because I believe before Journey, I had moments with God. I've always been somebody that's attended church. From a really young age, I've always felt a closeness to God, but there are periods where I would walk through life, and I think this is fairly normal for most people, where things are pretty good, and it's not that you grow away from God, but you don't grow in that closeness that you have when you know you need him, when we call to him because things are tough. And so before, I would have these moments with God, but now I feel like daily I'm living and relying on God. And he was telling me that was always there and always available to me, but I wasn't that good at it. I like to try to take things on myself, and I forget I'm not really supposed to. Like, God is that platform. He wants that closeness with us. He's our first father. He's our children's first father. So we're supposed to be tied so intimately to him. And Journey's given me that. There's not a day that I go through this journey with her and with my family now that I'm not living and relying on God. And that's true faith. It is so much stronger because I can recognize that before there were moments, and now it's a daily routine with him.
That's beautiful. And I really appreciate your vulnerability. I know that speaking about the faith journey often brings out a lot of emotion. And a lot of times it's stuff that we haven't fully talked about from top to bottom in a long time or all at once, maybe ever. And so a lot of times it does bring out emotion out of us. And I just really appreciate your vulnerability. And I know that it's not always easy things to talk about that we're asking of you. So we appreciate that. And I know so many people are going to get so much good out of your story, and it's going to help so many people. So just thank you. And I know there's going to be a lot of people that want to follow along with you and follow Journey. And if they've never seen your page before or seen Journey's sweet face, they're going to want to go see this girl that you've been talking so much about. So tell our listeners where they can find you and follow along with Journey's journey on social media.
On Facebook, you can find her on Our Journey. On Instagram, you can find her at jlove121518. And you can also find her on TikTok at Deirdre Michael Hoffman.
Hey, I didn't know you guys had a TikTok.
I'm old, so Facebook's kind of my staple, and I'm trying to learn some of the others. So she's got some cute TikToks, but they're ones that like my young support staff have done, and they're pretty cute. But as far as me creating them, a little bit tough.
I don't think I have the bandwidth for TikTok. We don't have that, but it seems like to be the cool new thing, right? But for a person that's grown with technology, I seem so out of touch. I really genuinely appreciate you coming on with us and sharing a little bit about Journey. I personally, and I know Emma is very excited to see how you can help us help the Trisomy 13 community, because that is a big part of our organization as well. But we're just not Trisomy 13 moms. So we really, really, really appreciate you coming on, and we're so excited for you to help us. I've always had it in my heart that you were the perfect person to help kind of bridge that gap in the community, because I think you're an incredible mother. I think you're a powerhouse advocate for Journey, and watching you guys on social social media has just been a huge blessing to my heart in seeing how even with people on social media, you're very vulnerable about the journey. And I admire that so much about you and the way that you love not only your Trisomy 13 families, but your Trisomy 18 families as well. I think it's great. And so I'm excited to have you on board. And I'm happy that you came on to share Journey with us.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you both very, very much. You know that I am a fan of both of yours as well. And I feel sorry for poor Emma over there, though, too, Amber, because I think you and I have these crazy loud personalities. And I just feel like Emma is so poised and reserved and all this that she's probably like, oh my gosh, I've got another crazy one on my hands right now, too. It's your draw added into the mix.
Oh, no, don't. So,
if only our listeners could see behind the scenes, yes. But I'm like running in here with my hair on fire at the time of our episode starting with my like microwave dinner in hand. Like there's nothing poised about this situation.
No, she's just as funny as we all are. And she seems poisonous. There's a reason she's the face of all of our videos.
Stop.
And there's just even behind the scenes stuff. I need to start doing some little like gag reels of side conversations and the funny things that we do before we hit record or after we hit record on an episode, because it's a ball of fun. And when it's business, it's business. And when it's not, she's just as goofy as the rest of us. So don't underestimate her.
I'm sure there's that side I haven't seen quite yet.
Oh yeah, she'll come out eventually. She's kind of like a gremlin. Once you feed it, it just kind of grows.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Thanks for listening, everybody. We're logging off.
If you're a family in need of financial assistance or support while navigating the diagnosis of trisomy 18 or 13, please find us at extratolove.org or on social media under the same name. If you want to sponsor an episode, please reach out to info@extratolove.org.
Day extra.